All right, everybody. God, where do we even begin this week? Neil, happy birthday.
Thank you, Sam. Happy birthday.
How's it going? I know you're eating some Indian food and otherwise, anything fun going on this week?
Meeting some people tomorrow for sort of a co-birthday dinner and to watch the start of the NFL season. I know that
Nice.
foosball
Do the
isn't
Broncos play
necessarily
tomorrow?
no, it's Cowboys and Giants, I think.
Okay, cool.
So we're not
Oh,
going to the
that's
game. We're
nice.
just going to a sports bar, but
Right,
might hit up a
yeah.
game later this year.
Cool.
Nice.
And other than
Yeah.
that, watching, playing anything? You played a little StarCraft with Jesse and I.
Yeah, that was fun. Been doing Metal Gear Solid 5 again. Got the birthday animation today, which was always nice. And been also been playing some RimWorld.
Nice. Very cool.
You
Did you
know, I'm
get
gonna have to
anything
look that
cool?
up. I'm not sure I know if what RimWorld is, but I'll look it up while you guys talk about whatever.
It's kind of like Dwarf Fortress. It's like a colony simulator. You've got people, but you don't like tell them exactly what to do. Instead, you like set their priorities.
Seems very
So
interesting.
Seems like really
it's more about
in-depth.
like making efficiency, I guess, is kind of the way to say it, rather than telling five workers to go cut down trees.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Well, that sounds cool. I'm looking at it. It looks kind of like a Neil game. Not that there's anything wrong with that. It just does. And okay, that's good. And how far are you in Metal Gear Solid 5?
Oh, I've just been like jumping around in missions and just like,
Okay.
sticking around. I haven't been like playing
Sticking
directly
around.
through.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's a great sandbox game to just stick around in, absolutely. So okay, more power to you.
Nice.
But are you yet ashamed of your words and deeds, Neil?
Always.
Okay. That's good. And
I have been even before that question was raised.
Okay. Well, sounds good then. Gideon, how about you? You've been we played a little bit of Gears of War earlier this week, but have you been up to anything else?
Doing a little bit of Fortnite, still in the Fortnite mines. I've been kind of not like super, but I've been watching some rom-coms with Alyssa, and that's been fun. We watched this one, it was okay, from 2012 called This Means War. It was entertaining. It was just interesting, like Tom Hardy's in it and Chris Pine and Reese Witherspoon. And it was kind of like, what if Tom Hardy and Chris Pine both fell for the same girl at the same time, but they also work at the CIA and they abuse their CIA resources and power to try and one up the other guy, the
Yeah,
homie.
that's funny.
And it's funny, it's like, 2012, that's when, you and me graduated high school, and it's like, oh, that wasn't that long ago. And then I'm watching it and like just hearing the way they talk about like, online dating, for example, or just like different things. And I'm just like, wow, this does feel dated. But then it's also weird because it's like he was in The Dark Knight Rises as well that same year, which I feel like
Yeah.
seems a little bit less dated. Just maybe it's just the style of the movie.
They both feel
Other
like I'm one of us in the wreckage, brother.
than yeah. Other than that, I did start reading Berserk, dude. So, over the
Yeah,
week,
dude.
dude, it's fucking great so far. I mean, I'm not
It's
far in at
awesome.
all. I'm really trying to avoid spoilers, and I'm gonna watch the 97 anime pretty soon, because I heard that's like amazing. But I got the first deluxe edition, which I know that's like the first three volumes, over the weekend, and I think it's like 700 pages, and I'm about 230 pages in.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, so I'm really excited to get those books and read it and go through it. I can't see myself not just like It's probably going to become one of my newest, like, favorite things, I bet. It just seems like so up my alley. So,
Yeah,
yeah.
it's pretty badass. Yeah,
Other
every
than
time I think I've
that,
seen the coolest shit ever in Berserk, I turn the page and then there's like something else that's even
yeah,
cooler.
it's fucking crazy. And the art,
Anybody with an automatic like crossbow mounted wrist crossbow thing?
yeah, with the cannon too, and the badass
Yeah,
sword and the cool cape.
so cool.
Yeah. Other than that, I've read it once, but I'm rereading Batman Year One because I'm reading along with a friend, and then we like talk about it after each issue, and I'm like reading it to Alyssa before bed. So that's what I've been up to.
Okay, man. Yeah, let's see what I've been up to. I finished mid Expedition 33, so that was fine. Overall, it was good. I don't buy the whole like, this is the greatest RPG of all time kind of talk that people have been talking about this game, but it was still like, pretty decent RPG. I have some issues with it. I really don't like the way it looks, and I think like it's so self-serious and a little bit like, all right, guys, like you guys are really going for the Academy Award here on this. I don't really know if it's like that profound. I mean, like, I kind of think like Nier Automata is a better version of the same kind of overall concept and everything, but yeah, it was okay. I've been playing a lot of Resident Evil 1 on PS1. That's been good. I finished the Jill campaign fairly easily, like in for like 4 hours, and the Chris campaign is absolutely kicking my ass. Chris's campaign is so much harder. So that's been good. What else I've been doing? I've been playing a lot of Wipeout as well. Just as kind of like a relaxed podcast, kind of no sound on kind of game. And I think at the end of the year, if I like compile all the games I played this year, not just stuff in 2025, I think that like Wipeout would probably be like toward the top of my list of like the games that I actually enjoyed playing the most this year. So, which is weird. I would never have thought that would happen with like a racing game, but something about the it's futuristic, like it's kind of cyberpunk, it's kind of retrofuturism, like the vibe of it, the soundtrack, the look, the feel, just everything about Wipeout is so cool. And I kind of like bought a bunch of new art and new posters to go in the rat's nest that are all from Wipeout. So it's like now my whole setup in the basement is like kind of Wipeout themed. So also that's cool. Haven't watched a lot aside from the movie that we're going to talk about in a little bit. I just had gigs 4 weekends in a row, so I'm excited to have this upcoming weekend where presumably there will be no gigs. I don't have to, blow 6 hours downtown on Saturday night. But no, otherwise things have been good. Got to go into the office tomorrow. I actually forgot my Labubu at the office, so I got to grab that tomorrow while I'm in there and make sure I get that home. So
Can't leave
no,
that,
otherwise, of course, Metal Gear Solid 3 Delta came out. Which is the modern remake of Metal Gear Solid 3 Snake Eater. I really like it, and I would recommend it, especially to people who have like never played a Metal Gear Solid or are very like unfamiliar with Metal Gear Solid. I think it's like a perfect starting point, and it's an awesome modern remake that takes away a lot of the like inconvenience of playing Metal Gear Solid 3. And it's just like a great modern stealth action game. That said, like, as a huge fan of the original Snake Eater and Subsistence, I think it's like it's better in some areas and it's worse in some other areas. So like I have some personal problems with it, but it's mostly like stuff that a super fan would not, or anybody but a super fan would not pick up on. So like for you, Gideon, who's like tangentially interested in Metal Gear, I think it's like a really, really good game. Because it would be like a trying experience to go back and play actual Metal Gear Solid 3, for anybody that doesn't have like a lot of nostalgia for it. Well, I still think it's awesome, but it's hard for me to separate my nostalgia from like, how somebody would feel if they weren't playing it. Like, but fun fact, Gideon, Metal Gear Solid 3 is how Neil and I became friends because we like knew each other, but we were like living in the same house for the first time together, and Neil would like watch me play Metal Gear Solid 3.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think that was I don't think I would have enjoyed it as much playing as I enjoy just watching Sam play it.
Mm-hmm. And then within like 2 weeks, Neil knew more about Metal Gear lore than I did.
That's awesome.
He surpassed me as the Metal Gear lore encyclopedia. So, anyway, so we are here this week to talk about a seminal movie, Rob Reiner's. God, Rob Reiner. his movie, This is Spinal Tap. Mm-hmm. I guess I brought the movie, so I'll kind of tell you why. We had watched the previous week, watched Small Soldiers, which was great, and the Good Toys were voiced by the cast of Spinal Tap, which I had read, and then I thought to myself, I was like, oh yeah, I have actually never seen Spinal Tap, although like, of course I've heard about it, and being in a band, people talk about it all the time, and people like reference the amps going to 11 and things like that, like all the time. Mm-hmm. But I never just sat down and watched it, and I thought, you know, it'd be something easy breezy here toward the end of the summer, 80-minute runtime, like, you know, let's go ahead and let's give it a go. So I was, of course, like tangentially familiar with like some of the jokes and some of the clips, and I knew it was like, oh, this is a fake band that kind of like became a real band and has actually like put out albums, and there's like a new Spinal Tap movie, but it's like this big thing. So Neil, what did you know about Spinal Tap before I brought it to the podcast?
So I had heard of them back in high school. Every year the cross country team would make a playlist that we would like put on a portable like CD player radio and just play on repeat, like on the bus, and like as we walked the trail before the race, we would drag it along with us, just like totally inconsiderate of everybody around us. But the Stonehenge song was on there, and I remembered seeing like early YouTube clips of a scene in the movie where the bassist tries to get through airport security with a like zucchini wrapped in tin foil in his pants.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not know that they were a fake band or a semi fake band. I just thought they were, you know, just sort of, like, you know, just a larger than life group that wasn't like super big. So going into this, I did know that it was a mockumentary, but for the longest time, I just thought they were sort of like a B-tier band that somehow got a documentary made about them.
So you kind of bit the onion a little bit then, like you were kind of halfway convinced, and we'll talk about that a little bit, but you were kind of like halfway convinced that this was like a real, like Iron Maiden contemporary or something.
Like back in high school, yeah.
Mm, okay. How about you, Gid? What did you know about Spinal Tap before watching it?
Pretty similar to you, Sam. Like, I'd always heard about, you know, Turn It Up to 11. Heard the name. I always thought the movie was just called Spinal Tap. I didn't realize it was This Is Spinal Tap. Just, yeah, always kind of heard about this movie, but never really saw any clips or anything until semi-recently. Like with the album they talk about, the album cover. And people were comparing that like newer Sabrina Carpenter album cover to that. So I wonder, I'm like, is she a big fan? Is that like I don't know if there's a connection or whatever. But yeah, so I hadn't heard any of the music. I don't think I'd seen any clips. I think I knew it was a mockumentary. But that's about it. Just kind of knew it for the Turn Up to 11 thing is the main thing. Yeah.
Right. Okay. I actually, one of my only exposures to Spinal Tap was in Guitar Hero 2, the last song of the first set is Tonight I'm Gonna Rock You Tonight, which is an awesome song. Actually, that was like one of my, and we'll talk about this a little bit, that was like one of my main takeaways from the movie was how good a lot of the songs are and how funny they are. Mm-hmm. So I've been talking a lot. Let's stick with you, Gideon. So what was your overall kind of 10,000 foot examination of Spinal Tap? I mean, you just got done watching it like, what, an hour ago?
Yeah, like an hour or two ago. Yeah, I mean, I had a lot of fun. I was definitely laughing pretty hard at quite a few of the jokes. I think
like
they
what's one that stands out to you?
God, I'm trying to remember. I'll have to like look up some quotes, but I mean, the whole Stonehenge being like really tiny and like the 18 inches, that shit was cracking me up. That was really good. And just like the lead guitarist guy when he's in the room full of guitars and he's like, don't touch that, don't even point at it, like just like shit like that, like they're what their neuroses and stuff like that, I thought was really spot on and just funny. And yeah, I don't know, I think it's funny too that this movie is in the Criterion Collection. I think it recently just got a 4K Blu-ray in the Criterion Collection, which is awesome. I just rented the DVD from the library. That's how I watched it. I did struggle for some fucking reason. The DVD didn't have English subtitles. It had Spanish and French subtitles. And boy, I was struggling with like their accents. I was really trying. Maybe my favorite joke, there might be others that I'm forgetting, but dude, when they got like lost and turned around in the fucking like boiler room trying to make it to the stage, and how they kept getting these like weird shitty gigs, like that really got me. And then like when they're playing at like the fucking airport hangar or whatever the fuck they are, and his like fancy wireless like guitar transceiver thing is like tuning into the like tower broadcast, like that was fucking funny. So yeah, I just had fun with that. And obviously the turn it to 11, it was nice seeing that iconic little moment after hearing about it for forever.
Okay. And how about you, Neil?
I was kind of shocked that like so this is in the Criterion Collection. It's like considered culturally significant by the Library of Congress. And part of me wonders if like this is just not a Neil coded movie, where maybe I just like don't know enough like music lore to have really gotten this.
Right.
Like my big thought was this movie crawled so that Metalocalypse could walk and then run.
leap okay. into the air.
Yeah. Yeah, there were definitely parts where I was bored, and like you know, it kept me engaged enough with like maybe it was like the dumb humor, the dumb Neil humor, where like okay, there'll be something funny soon, but for a while I was just kind of like for me, a comparison was. There's this old sort of mini series on YouTube called Yacht Rock that does sort of a comedically dramatized series of stories about a lot of like 70s and 80s musicians, particularly Kenny Loggins and Michael McDonald. Basically leading up to how Kenny Loggins wrote Danger Zone. And you know, it's like 12 5-minute episodes basically. And I think I preferred that to this. Okay. I was kind of like I think this like the idea for this came out of a sketch show.
Okay.
And I think I would have liked like sort of a episodic, like, you know, here's a 5-7-minute sketch and then here's another one. I felt like there was a lot of filler, I guess. In a relatively short movie.
Yeah, actually, you guys might be surprised to hear this, but I felt similarly to you, Neil, where it is a short movie, and still there were parts, especially like toward. I thought the first half of this movie was like hysterically funny, like some really really good jokes, and then some of the songs had me like. Laughing to the point where there were tears coming down my eyes, especially like the song Big Bottom. You guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, with the mud flaps and stuff.
Yeah, where he says Big Bottom, Big Bottom, you want mud flaps, my girl's got them, or something like that. I was like fucking laughing my ass off.
Yeah,
I thought you would appreciate that song that there's no lead guitar; they're all just playing bass.
yeah, that was awesome. There was just some like I like the bass player getting trapped in like the ridiculously
oh my god
prog rock.
Yeah,
the alien pods, and then you go, like, "What's that noise?" Great. And then it cuts back over to him. There's the guy pounding on it with a hammer. That was awesome. Like there was so much good shit in the first half of the movie, and then you know, maybe this is just because it's hitting too close to home. But the second half of the movie was so fucking sad to me. I was like, "This isn't fun anymore. This is just shitty." Like,
yeah, kind
when
of
they
fun,
were like
yeah.
build. They were like build below the puppet show. I was like, oh no. Or like when you know the Stonehenge joke, like that's what, like one of the best jokes in the movie because you know what's gonna happen. And like they're playing on stage and then like it's you can kind of see it in the lighting and then it like begins to descend and it's like ridiculously small and you're just like, oh god, hear me. Like I was feeling secondhand embarrassment for all for the Spinal Tap crew, and by the end, I just felt so bad for him at the end. So yeah, like I overall had a good time, but I would say that was, I hit the point where I was having a good time because it was so short, right? Like if this movie would have been 20 to 30 minutes longer, it would have been like really miserable, but you know, they kind of like limped it over the finish line of like what would be an acceptable runtime for a feature film. But yeah, like, you know, that's a good way of putting it, I think. It's like, this is an extended SNL sequence. Like, it's an SNL sketch bumped up to about an hour and 20 minutes, and that's about all it's really good for. But I did enjoy myself, and I had a good time. But largely, you know, I agree. There were some parts I was starting to kind of fall off and be like, "All right, let's get this wrapped up." So I guess to anybody who doesn't know, and anybody who's listening, the overall plot of Spinal Tap is that this is like a rapidly aging rock band who's been around since this movie came out in like 1984, kind of at like the height of I don't want to say height of hair metal, but like certainly Iron Maiden was big and other big popular metal bands from around that era. A rapidly aging rock band who has been around since the mid 60s. They started off as kind of a Beatles-esque group, and they were a skiffle group, and then they were a flower power group, and then they were big in the 70s, and now they're like, you know, they're like rapidly approaching middle age, and they're still out there on the road trying to make this Iron Maiden thing work, and things are starting off like pretty okay. They're playing like theater, like small theaters, and then like by the end of the movie, their managers quit. They're like the opening act for puppet shows. They're playing at an Air Force base. They're just playing like the worst gig. They're playing like places that I play, right? They're playing like the worst gigs imaginable. So, it's just kind of, it kind of gets sad, and it's mostly about the lead singer, David Sade Hubbins, and then Christopher Guest as Nigel Tufnel, the lead guitarist, and kind of the drama between those guys. There is a bass player who isn't given a ton to do. There's an ever-rotating cast of drummers who keep dying, which is like an ongoing gag. I thought a standout, I don't know about you guys about stand-up performances, but I would say, like, I love the manager in this movie.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I liked him a lot.
Yeah, I think he was actually my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think
him wielding the big the cricket bat, I thought was awesome.
Yeah, that was funny. I love when there's like a bit like that where they show like a character talking about an object or something, and then cutting to like him smashing the TV and clearing off the table and shit. That's so good.
I thought another standout, although he's in the movie for like 5 minutes, was Paul Schaefer, David Letterman's band leader. He shows up as Artie Fufkin. He's the promoter at the record store who sets up the autograph session. And like nobody shows up. He's like, kick my ass, please, kick my ass. I thought that guy was really funny.
Who is he again? Sorry.
He's David Letterman's band leader. on the Tonight Show or on the Late Night with David Letterman.
Okay.
You would recognize him if you saw him. He looks very different when he was like Letterman's band leader, but yeah, I thought that was good.
I got a couple standout moments I'm kind of remembering. Dude, the fucking mimes in the beginning that were like waiters or something, that was really cracking me up. That was so funny. I was like, what the hell is this? That like just got me so good. And the ridiculous like guitar solo. The lead guitarist might have been my favorite. Just like seeing him do the guitar and then he's like making all these faces when he's doing like, you know, the squealy notes and then fucking basically kicking the other guitar on the stand and then using the violin as like a bow on the guitar. That was all great. And I was curious with near the end of the movie, does their drummer like die off screen or something?
Because he explodes.
Oh, I must have totally fucking missed it. Okay.
It wasn't a very well communicated explosion. It was like you saw a noise and the drummer was just gone. There was like no big explosion effect or anything like that. And then he was just like replaced with another drummer.
Okay. Interesting. I wanted to mention that kind of like what Neil was saying earlier about like, you know, wishing I kind of knew more about musical history or different bands of different eras and stuff like that. Like I feel like a good example is that bit, which I did find it funny still, but I probably would have found it more funny if I had more context and knowledge about this artist. But when the limo driver is trying to talk to them about that book and he's talking about like Frank Sinatra is going on and they roll up the window and he's like, oh, they don't, you know, Frank had nothing and he had to build himself up or whatever he's saying. Like, I really like that. But yeah, I was like, I felt like a lot of that stuff was kind of getting lost on me. And some of the other like issues I had with the movie is like I was just getting kind of confused as like what was even happening at times.
Yeah, it feels like maybe more time is passing than they're letting on. Like it seems like this almost takes place over the course of like 6 months to a year. And something about the pacing, the short pacing in the movie makes it feel like it takes place in like a couple days. Like things go down the hill like so quickly. Neil, any standout like funny comedy moments?
I do really like the so correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that in the context of the movie there is a documentary filmmaker and it's, you know, it's being presented, you know, this is a mockumentary, is being presented as that. But the guy who is directing the documentary is also the director of the actual movie. I think his name's Rob Reiner.
Yeah, that's correct.
And a lot of his interview scenes, I think, are some of the standout moments of the movie. Like he's going over their, like the history of some of their records, and then like he's getting to like their more recent ones, and said like, you know, your last record, Shark Sandwich, Rolling Stone gave it a 2-word review. Shit sandwich. I was like, well, you can't say that on TV.
That was so funny.
That really got at me. I think the scene where that Gid talked about where he's showing off the guitar collection was really great. And the other one is, I only remember Michael McKean's character, St. Hubbins, but I think, is it Nigel is the other kind of lead guitarist? Yeah. At one point, Nigel, he's playing this, like, I thought, like, really pretty sort of thing on the piano. I think it's called, like, a variation where he's just, like, sort of improvising, and it's like, I just thought it was, and it's just bizarre name for it.
Love pump. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would you say it fell somewhere in between Mozart and Bach, Neil?
I'm not smart enough to answer that question.
He's like, yeah, I just find D minor to be the most the saddest of all keys, and this is called Lick My Love Pump. And I was like, that's awesome.
I didn't realize this because I didn't have subtitles, but I'm looking at the quote right now. He says, yeah, I'm really influenced by Mozart and Bach. It's sort of in between those. It's like a mock piece. I'm like, oh my fucking God. That's pretty good.
Yeah, dude, I think there's probably a lot that I missed. That's probably some subtitles might help.
I found that the subtitles were incredibly helpful because there's a lot of subtle jokes that go under the radar. Like this isn't like a super subtle one, but the manager's like, the Boston gig's been canceled, and they're like all pissed. He's like, I wouldn't worry about it. It's not a big college town. It's like, oh my God, what are you guys talking about?
I didn't think that was funny. I was like, what?
Oh, I did love that it. Give a shout out to Des Moines.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Somewhere in Indiana.
Yeah. I also just thought the name of the album, "Lick" or "Smell the Glove," was like hilarious. There's something so funny to me about the idea that that's the name of the album.
It's so funny, dude. Oh my God, I liked. When they were talking about the drummers that had died, and they're like, oh, he died in a bizarre gardening accident. And then Nigel says, authorities said, best leave it unsolved.
Yeah. I thought the bit where they were trying to, where like Nigel pulls the manager backstage and he's like, we have a bit of a problem. The problem is that the bread isn't big enough.
That was so funny. That was like such a good moment of just like explaining the random bullshit like the manager has to put up with these like rock stars, and he's like, you can't even fold it, like, look at this. He's like crumbling the bread. That was good. That was really good,
man. I know, guys. I'm laughing a lot just remembering some of this shit. I had a good time.
It's a good hangout movie. I think it's like a peaks and valleys movie. I think there's like a lot of like really funny parts, and then it's like speed it up, guys. Come on.
This would have been a really good like film in 40s like movie with the bros night kind of like having a pizza and watching this, you know, to kind of like occupy the downtime. Yeah, I mean, I'm okay with like doing a little bit of a shorter episode because I feel like we don't have it. It's not a very plot driven movie. I mean, it's like, you know, Spinal Tap goes down the fucking tubes. I mean, what is there to say? They get back to, you know, the lead guitar player leaves at the bottom point of the movie and comes back at the very end. I mean, basically cut the credits after that.
Actually, I will say that there's a bunch of like during credits outtakes or whatever. That I thought were like pretty good. Like, why wasn't this in the main movie?
Oh, I thought another really funny line that I'm definitely gonna like repeat and claim as my own is when like they run in the hotel, they run into the rock star that they like were up and comers with, and he's like way bigger than they are now.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to make small talk with him. He's like, well, he'd love to stay around and chat, but I got to sit down in the lobby and wait for the limo.
That was so good. That was so funny.
So, two things. Number one is, like, I'm just reading, like, the Wikipedia article about this. And, you know, despite, you know, my sort of lack of enthusiasm about this, like, apparently this movie is just, like, incredibly influential. One thing I noted was I wondered like how much like Metallica knew about this with the Black Album. Apparently it's like a direct reference actually. Like all these like major bands have like quotes about it being like the only rock documentary that matters, and it's kind of like this dividing line where like you either see yourself in this documentary and like how bullshit the record industry can be, or you're part of the problem. So it's super interesting just to see like
yeah,
me being like outside of like the music industry entirely, like how influential this is to people that even I know about. But
I think there's a lot of truth to that. Like when I'm reading about this is Spinal Tap, people like rank it up there with the best music documentaries of all time, like Don't Look Back and things like that, even though it's obviously fictitious. I think like musicians especially just love this movie to death.
But I did have a question for you, Sam. I forget who I was discussing this with, but at least in their like quote unquote like modern setting, because you know the film goes over like the history of the band and they've gone through multiple phases. But like when we meet them, they're like labeled as like a heavy metal band, and I was kind of like, you know, like kind of like by today's standards, like even like names like Metallica or Judas Priest that were like, you know, like the front of heavy metal during the 80s, like compared to stuff nowadays are like you might like demote them down to hard rock almost.
Right.
Like,
oh yeah, for sure.
And like, and then Spinal Tap is like, they're like heavy metal for like maybe one song and then they go full prog rock.
Yeah.
I was just like, man, how times have changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Certainly by the time they're coming out of the eggs on stage, or in the case of the bass player, they're not coming out of the eggs. They've progressed into a full progressive rock production. Or especially like when, if you have a song about Stonehenge, you're a prog rock band. That's just no, there's no way of getting around that.
When they were doing, oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, go ahead. I was just going to say that, like, I think a certain amount of theatricality, like, kind of makes it, like, if you take any band from the 80s and put Stonehenge on stage, it's a prog rock band, right? It's, like, less of a musical definition at that point, and it's, like, you are just not cool anymore, because, and now you've progressed into progressive rock.
I mean, like, I was, like, they have a keyboardist who I think is like underutilized throughout the movie because he's funny in everything that he's in, but like the moment I saw that they had a keyboardist, I'm like, this isn't heavy metal, this is prog rock.
Yeah,
we've already made the jump.
Yeah, I would kind of agree with that.
I just thought some of that was funny. I was thinking about you, Sam, when I was watching, like, yeah, some of that more like fantasy tinge stuff. I was like, is this like what Sam feels like when he's like pulling up the Rush music video for me or something? Like,
Yeah, I love it.
That's so funny. One thing I wanted to mention that kind of heightened some of the comedy for me, the lead singer, Michael McKean. So I pretty much mainly know him from Better Call Saul, and he's just this like super stern lawyer type. So I thought that was really funny, just seeing him be this like ridiculous rocker with the hair and everything. And I wanted to ask you guys, like, what do you think about this movie getting a sequel that comes out in a couple weeks? I think.
Yeah, I think it's.
Oh, I didn't know it was. I thought it was already out.
Is it out? I thought it was a couple weeks.
I don't. It must not be. Oh, it is. It's like next. It's September 12th.
Okay, there we go. Let's see. Because, yeah, I thought it was, like, middle of the month or something.
Interesting. I'm going to have to go see this because, like, I thought, like, I would definitely, like, watch a sequel to Spinal Tap. But I'm not going to, like, torture you guys with that, but I would definitely, like...
Well, yeah, definitely let us know. And it's
the poster,
the
they're standing on... The poster, they're standing on a giant Stonehenge.
So funny. And the two is the Stonehenge prop.
Especially a little tiny one, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's
funny. That's awesome. Yeah, I'm gonna have to like check this out.
Yeah, I'm curious. I hope it's good, but you never know with legacy sequels.
Yeah. So let's take this in a different direction. What do you guys think is the best legacy sequel? Now I know that is a pretty wide definition, but like, you know, and nobody's nobody's keeping us on the straight and narrow in terms of it's our podcast. We can define things how we want. So, like, do you guys have a favorite legacy sequel?
This is a weird one for me. Off the top of my head, I really like Tron Legacy, but I've never seen the original Tron. So,
off the top of my head, Fury Road.
Fury Road, definitely.
I might have a different answer if I think about it some more, but yeah, Fury Road is the first one that comes to mind.
Gideon, was Tron Legacy the one with the Daft Punk did the soundtrack? Okay. And is that as awesome as it seems?
Yeah, have you not seen that one?
I have not.
Tron Legacy. It's solid. It's very solid. I haven't seen the original one. It definitely made me a fan of that world. The music is dope. I remember we got the Daft Punk soundtrack for Christmas one year, and the fucking CD, dude, was black. It was like a black disc. It was really cool.
Dude, that's how like the early PS2 games had blue bottoms on them. They were like blue metallic shiny bottom.
One more legacy sequel I want to shout out is Dr. Sleep. I was not crazy about it at first, but it has grown on me a lot. And I'm going to try and watch the director's cut this year, because I heard it's like 3 hours long with that. And I heard people like swear by the director's cut. But that's by, I think it's Michael or Matthew, Michael Flanagan. He's done a lot of like horror show series for Netflix. Midnight Mass being a very notable one, and mine and Alyssa's favorite.
I'm gonna put both of you guys in the ground with my choice. Blade Runner 2049 is the greatest legacy sequel of all time.
I didn't think about that, but yeah, I fucking love.
But again, you know, it's kind of like it's kind of a legacy sequel. It has all the totally requirements, right? And if they wouldn't have brought Harrison Ford back, I would have said like maybe that's just a sequel, but.
I don't know, because it's like it is a true continuation, and it's like, you know, many years after the original.
Yeah, it's definitely. Yeah, I suppose so.
Oh,
I actually think that movie would be a lot better without Harrison Ford, but that's a conversation for another time.
Yeah, see our other episode about Blade Runner.
Part time.
One thing my friend said when we watched Tron Legacy way back is there's a scene where Jeff Bridges is fighting Jeff Bridges on a bridge. So that's pretty peak cinema right there, you know.
Gideon, that's like the exhibit 4chan meme from 20 years ago. Yeah, I put a bridge in your bridge so you can bridge like a bridge, bro.
That's funny.
Oh well, guys, I'm ready to hop to score. I mean, I don't have that much more to say about Spinal Tap. I thought it was a good time. Funny movie, but something that it doesn't beg a lot of discussion just because of the just not a lot happens in this movie. Even though it is funny and it's pretty light fare, you know, so I'm gonna give this movie a 3. I really liked it. I laughed a lot, but at the end of it, especially by like, if you would have asked me halfway through, I would have said easy 4, but I thought it definitely ran out of steam toward the end. How about you, Neil?
I think I need to rewatch this to give it like a really definitive rating, but for now I'm going to give it a 2. I was definitely like checking my phone a lot during it. Like when it was funny, it was great. But it was just kind of a slog. I almost feel like it should have been a mini series kind of thing, or a selection of like shorts, like a clip show.
Oh, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty much between a 2 and a 3. If I was gonna give it a 3, it'd be a light 3, but I think I would lean more on the 2, because I feel like it gets almost a little lost in the sauce, and I get just kind of like confused and like, where are we going, like what's happening now. I agree with a lot of the points Neil made and like the peaks and valleys, and like it is really, really funny at times. And I think it does an excellent job portraying, you know, even though they're a fictional band, like they seem very real. And even when the credits are rolling, it's like, oh, I'm not able to hang out with them anymore, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, it's like it's similar to other movies I've talked about. It's like sometimes I feel like I would benefit if I had like a super fan with me and they can give me all this like lore and tidbits and trivia about this, or if I could, you know, do more research about it. And I, you know, I do think it's iconic with like turning up to 11 and different jokes and how it's influenced like media and music and stuff like that. But just didn't hit as hard. And it's like maybe because, you know, it's before my time and other stuff like that. But yeah, so if it was between 2 and 3, I would lean more towards the 2 for now. So
all
still
right.
had a lot
well,
of fun though.
I think that's all well and good. I mean, I've got no problem with those ratings. I think it's like totally understandable. I think this might be the farthest we've been off of a Criterion release. If you know, like this movie's pretty like universally acclaimed across the board, and we were all like much more mid on it.
It's got
3. Has there been another movie?
Letterboxd.
Has there been another movie that is like commonly cited as like a critical touch point that like we've rated pretty mid on the podcast? Let me somebody talk for a minute. I'll scroll through the back episodes and
yeah, I'm looking through the sheet right now.
One more legacy sequel got a shout out. And again, I still haven't seen the original, but Top Gun Maverick. It's like 10 out of 10 on the tech specs of how they did everything, but like 7 out of 10, just whatever, enjoyable summer story. But I love it for the tech spec shit. It is fucking awesome for all that stuff.
Have you seen Ghost Protocol game?
The game? Isn't it the game, right?
No, the Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol.
Fourth one? I don't think I've seen this one. No.
Okay. That's like the one that everybody says is like the best shit ever.
Okay. I've seen Mission Impossible Fallout. Is Ghost Protocol the fourth one? I want to go through them all.
Okay.
I've seen some of the newer ones. I haven't seen the latest, but I saw the part one of the latest one.
Neil, did you find any interesting examples?
None that we were all like universally against it. Like, you know, I've got my rating for Marie Antoinette, which is out of line with the rest of you, but nothing where we're like it's a commonly accepted like great movie, and we're not fans of it as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The only one when I'm looking through here, the two that stand out to me are ones that I rated highly, but everybody else hated. In particular, Midnight. No, not we didn't actually do. Did we actually do Midnight in Paris?
Yeah,
early on.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It would be that and High Fidelity are the two that are like critical darlings, and I like them that you guys didn't. The other one that sticks out to me is Rosemary's Baby, which is like regarded as an all-time classic, and I think we were all pretty mid on it.
We all gave it a 4.
I think on revisiting it, I would have probably given it a 3.
Okay.
And even like High Fidelity, I think I would rewatch it and give it at least a 2.
Yeah, High Fidelity, I gave it a 3. Sam gave it a 5, and Kid gave it a 1.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's more just
being
out of line.
That's a spread right there.
Or no, sorry, Sam, you gave it a 4.
High Fidelity.
But yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. So we've got some where like particular people didn't like it, but nothing where we're just like totally against the
crowd.
Critical, yeah.
Okay.
Maybe High Plains Drifter. I don't know what because you and Gabe both gave it a 2.
Yeah,
but that might be the closest.
What'd you give that, Neil?
I gave it a 3, and Alex gave it a 3.
Okay.
Yeah, that one did not hold up for me. I think we did that like the same week as Streets of Fire or something.
Yeah, double feature.
Okay. Man. Well, I'll tell you what, guys. It was no Jingle All the Way. I'll tell you that.
No Hard Boiled, dude.
I don't know, maybe Videodrome. We got 2 3s and a 2.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah, I think
Videodrome
is
a weird one. Because I think I remember giving it a 3, and then at the end of the year it was like in my top 5. Just, you know, it's like one of those that kind of stands out in your mind is like,
yeah,
say what you will about it, flawed movie, maybe it's a little boring, it definitely is memorable.
Oh yeah, very interesting and also very influential.
So who's next? Is it I think it would have to be Gideon, right? All right, what you got, man?
I do have it picked out. I was curious, have you guys seen the original Tron?
Never.
Neil?
Nope.
Nice. Okay, let's do that, because I've never seen it. I really like Tron Legacy. You know, we've been talking about that. And I think the new Tron Ares movie comes out before the end of the month. So I figured it'd be a good time to do it. Let's see. Okay, October 10th, my bad. So, pretty soon, though.
Oh, so, 1982. Yeah. It's a little later than I thought. I thought it was a movie from the 70s for some reason.
Okay.
96 minutes, nice and breezy.
Oh, nice. I didn't look it up. Nice. But yeah,
for some reason, I thought it was longer. Maybe that's the sequel.
Yeah, that might be like 2 hours. Let's see.
Yeah, Tron Legacy is 2 hours.
Yeah, yep. Okay. Yeah, because I've always been curious about it, always heard about Tron, just never got around to it. I think I'd appreciate it a lot more now than if I watched it when I was younger. So yeah, I think it's a good time to do it. Yeah, let's do Tron.
All right, guys. Tron, next week. Be here, be square. That's not how that scene goes at all. Be there, be square. Oh, shout out to the Tron level from Kingdom Hearts 2.
Oh, okay.
Gideon, I mean, so, you know, in all the in the Kingdom Hearts games, you go to all the different Disney worlds, right? So for one of the worlds in Kingdom Hearts 2, you get sucked into a computer, and then it turns out that you end up going to the Tron world.
That's pretty dope.
Do you do the light cycle thing? You do the light cycles. Okay. You get a keyblade that looks like a lightsaber. You have like a, like you, Donald, and Goofy are all dressed up in like the skin tight Tron like outfits. I think you meet Jeff Bridges and
Okay.
Kingdom Hearts 2 is goaded. Okay. This is when are we gonna start doing the Kingdom Hearts podcast? That's the real question. Kingdom Hearts 1 is for certified sheds. I'm sorry. That game is awesome.
I'm autistic, but I'm not that autistic.
Jarvis, I'm going to need Neil's search history on the Warhammer 40K wiki. Thank you. I'm going to need to see how many pages have been hit over the years. Okay. I'll see you guys next week, and we'll talk about Tron.
All right. Later, boys.
Peace, guys.